Well, brethren, there are two fundamental systems or structures that we rely upon to make decisions. Both have their sources, both have their logic, both have their motivation, both have their origins, both have their wisdom, and both have their manifestations and their outcomes. It's a topic that we recently discussed at the men's club, and I thought it would be helpful today to discuss one specific aspect that we didn't discuss, so guys, don't worry about it. But we didn't discuss, and I think it would be helpful for the congregation as a whole to discuss, again, these sources and specifically one of them, and then question, really, where do we build our life upon? Most of us want to make wise decisions. No one says, I want to make a horrible financial decision. Nobody says that. Nobody sets out to do that. No one says, you know what? I want to blow up my marriage and starts acting in a way that you know will devastate your very marriage, the fundamental building block of a society. Brethren, it is perhaps the first and most fundamental decision we will make is whose knowledge, understanding, and wisdom we're going to live by. It may be the first one we have to make. Now you may think, well, that's easy. I'll just choose the good way. If you just decide that, what exactly is that? I mean, you may ask that question. It's like, okay, well, I'm just going to do the right thing. Well, what is that? How do you know? How do you define that? And this is something we need to think about. How do you know exactly that you are choosing the good way if you made that call? Brethren, the decision we have to make is a conscious, intentional choice of which way we're going to follow. And for the Christian, and really for even the atheist, it's not a one-and-done decision. It's a decision you will make every time you have a choice, and it affects every aspect of your life. It'll be 10,000 times 10,000 to the power of 10,000, probably decisions you make within your conscious lifetime. Why? Why do we have to make that decision so much, especially as Christians? I think fundamentally it's because we were born into earthly wisdom. And brethren, we have all been called. We have been all been called to seek out the divine wisdom. And that is a lifelong endeavor. In fact, I found a quote from Albert Einstein. I thought it was wrong. He says, wisdom is not the product of schooling, but the lifelong attempt to acquire it. And that's where we are. We are in many ways in a lifelong attempt to acquire divine or godly wisdom. James gives us some vivid descriptions of what each way of life or each type of wisdom looks like. Let's turn over to James chapter 3. Again, James actually paints a very vivid picture of the distinction between the two. And again, from a disciple perspective or from a Christian perspective, it's fundamental that we understand and separate these two and understand part of the decision of a Christian is which one of these are you going to live your life on and which one are you going to make choices and decisions which affects your whole character and your morality. James chapter 3, we'll start in verse 13. He says, who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. I mean, in one verse, we already get a tremendous insight into wisdom from above, or wisdom that is godly, because true wisdom will be manifest in good conduct and positive results. Again, I think just that one nugget, as we go through our life, we can look at the results of our decisions and ask that question. Did it produce good conduct in you, those around you? And did it produce positive results? If it did not, you might ask the question, did I make that decision? Was that a wise decision? Did I make it built upon the right foundation and the right source? Equally true in this verse, we see that godly wisdom is meek and humble. And it just flies in contrary to the next verse and the next really two verses. Dramatically so that it's worth noting and pointing out. Humility and meekness is required for godly wisdom. And again, I think as we go through life, if we're honest with ourselves, and we'll read a verse later that says we really ought to be, we may ask the question as we go through, did I approach this with meekness and humility? Verse 14, here becomes the contrast. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. Brethren, wisdom that is from below is hallmarked by envy and self-seeking. And it is sourced from within the individual and from within communities, groups, if you will, of individuals. It is the spirit of ambition and contention. And I think it's interesting, he said, but if you have this, and if we had more of an interactive format, I'd ask, who here doesn't have some level of envy and some level of self-seeking? None of us should raise our hands. I think James is trying to get the readers to understand. It's like, yeah, there are worse cases out there. But if you have it, don't boast against it. Because if you do, you're lying against the truth. Because brethren, to the extent we are motivated by bitter envy and self-seeking, instead of the meekness of wisdom, it should teach us something. It should help us to understand. And again, James describes it, you're lying against truth if you say you don't at least have that in part. It's an honest, open assessment to say that. Now again, we don't make our living over there. We try to suppress that. But again, I think it's important for all to acknowledge, again, we're climbing out of the wisdom of this age into the divine wisdom. Verse 15, but this wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic. That's pretty strong. I mean, earthly, okay, sensual, yeah, I get that. Demonic, that's what this wisdom is. And he says, for where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. I ask you, what do you see in the world today? Do we see peace and harmony? Or do we see confusion and arguably every evil thing? I think we all know the answer to that. And reflecting back on the point he made in verse 14, I think the more difficult question for us to answer, do we see that in our lives? Do we see that in some level in our lives? I will, again, I think an honest conversation with almost anybody, there's been times decisions that every one of us have made have resulted in confusion and have not resulted in the good and the right and the positive outcome. Again, I think that's an honest characterization. But he cycles back now to the wisdom that is from above. Verse 17. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure. First of all, whatever you might think of wisdom that is from above, it is pure. It is authentic. It is transparent. You could say it is clean. It's one of the dictionary definitions, Bible dictionaries. It's literally the opposite of boasting and lying, which is disingenuous and opaque. He says, first of all, it is pure. And I love this list. Then, after that, it's peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruits of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. What a contrast. And again, I think we can look at that and ask which ones are extant in my life. But what a contrast to look at. The wisdom that is from below, or the earthly wisdom, is earthly, sensual, demonic, envious, self-seeking, confusion, and causes every evil thing. From above, it's pure, peaceable, gentle, yielding, merciful, has good results, impartial, non-hypocritical. Again, being a peaceable person, you could go through this whole list, being a peaceable person then is wisdom. That's just picking the first item off the list. Think it's not? try the other option and see how it turns out. Try that option and then try the other option and see which one works out better for you. I can guarantee you God's way of peaceable is going to work out better for you in the end. And you can go through, again, this whole list. Everything James mentions, you can go through and ask yourself that question. And yes, it is contrary to our natural response. And yes, we will have to focus and work on it. One of the ways I think you can look at each one of these, and you'll have to pardon my way of wording this a little bit. But if you go through, and again, we can just pick on peaceable. You could ask yourself, which one of these lists, and throughout, you know, again, we could extend it to any of the items, which one of these lists will make your life more hellish? I know this, it's a way of saying, it's like, I don't mean literally, you know, brimstone and fire. But which one makes it more difficult in your life? Which one produces bad results? And we know the answer, but humanly we live by it too much. And you could also, again, ask the positive of that. Which one makes your life more heavenly? And I don't mean, you know, angels and harps and clouds. I mean upward. Like, which wisdom descended from God above and that he blessed and gave you? The one that says, live by peace. And again, one of those, if you have bitterness and self-envy and seek your own ways, your life will be more miserable. My terming here, it will be more hellish. It will make everything worse. If you live by and we accommodate the wisdom that is from above, your life will improve in time. And of course, you know, you don't always get instant results. I think if you look at God's way right now, you know, a lot of people look and say, he doesn't get any results. But we know in time he will. I want to point out one more contrast between those two ways, because it might not jump off the page, but I think it's mentioned it a moment ago. It's extraordinarily important. Because earthly wisdom is sown in words. Because it says it's boasting and lying. It's just words. Heavenly wisdom is shown in actions. Again, you can see that in verse 14 and verse 13, flipping them a little bit. Because it says in our actions, who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. Sure, you may have all the right words. But what does it produce? Again, earthly wisdom produces flowing speeches and wise sayings and great things. And that's where it ends. It's hypocritical, as was mentioned. For the rest of the message, I want to focus on the wisdom that's from above. I want to explore this, again, for the remainder of the message. Because I think there's a profound understanding that informs and colors literally everything we do. Every choice, every decision we make. If I were to ask you, what existed before anything physical, what would you put on that list? Again, I mean, just quickly in your head, just sort of mentally make a list of what would you say existed before the first drop of dust was created? I came up with God, who we now know as the Father, but back then, God, the Logos. Many of the other things I had doodled down, I kind of started erasing because they were really attributes of God. They were, you know, love. Okay, well, God says, I'm love. You know, well, truth. Okay, well, God says, okay, well, I'm that too. You know, so it's interesting how many things kind of got taken off the list because God says those are attributes of who I am. Kindness, mercy, grace, and all those things. So I came up with three items. God the Father, again, God at the time became a father, and the Word, the Logos. Depending on your understanding of one, well, maybe more, but the main one that people use is Job 38, verses 4 through 7. Maybe you could say the angels existed before dust and dirt and anything physical. Because it does say, you know, that they laid the foundations of the earth, the initial, it's really your choices. Were they there at the initial creation or the recreation in Genesis? But we know they were there at the recreation in Genesis because the morning star sang. Again, it really depends on your understanding of that. That may be, again, as far as beings go, that may be it. There are scant few things that the Bible depicts as predating creation. And when we find one, brethren, to our topic today, it is worth paying attention to you. We should give due attention to something that God's inspired word says existed before creation. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 8. Proverbs chapter 8. And we'll just read a couple, a few sections out of here. It is worth reading this whole chapter when you have time. It is, again, it's one of those chapters you could almost stop on every verse and go, wow, the implications of that verse are profound. But in this chapter of Proverbs, wisdom is personified. So it's going to talk of wisdom as though it was a person. But again, it's very, it's just, again, just an extraordinarily profound insight that we can gain from what is said here. We're going to start in verse 1. It says, does not wisdom cry out and understanding lift up her voice? She takes her stand on the top of the hill besides the way where the paths meet. She cries out at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the entrance of the door. To you, O man, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. Again, we could spend we could spend a whole sermon just unpacking those first four verses. But just in summary, I mean, verse 2, essentially she gives understanding to navigate the chaos of living. She is there on the high hill where she can see and see at a distance and give some guidance to where, but you cannot see. She's up there. And again, it's personified as a person. She's there at the on the way. So as you're navigating through life, she's right there telling you, hey, this is the way. Walk you in it, so to speak. And also where the paths meet or the crossroads, when decisions come your way, which way do you take? Wisdom can be there to guide you and teach you in that. Again, my summary is the chaos of living, because you don't know. You don't know what tomorrow brings. You don't know what next week brings. You don't know everything down to the pedestrian. Oh, is that a good financial choice or not? Right now, looks like all my financial choices were stupid because of the way the market's going. But we don't know. Verse 3, she cries out upon entering every new domain. I think that's what that verse is saying, because she's at the gates. She's at the entrance to the city, and she's at the entrance to every door. Every time you enter a new sphere or new domain of life, wisdom is there to help and to teach. And as you navigate those and you're going between, we're all, something, I'm an employee. Well, I'm also a boss. Well, I'm a dad. Well, I'm also a husband. Well, I'm a brother. Well, I'm also a son. As you go in and out of those, wisdom can teach you. Again, she's there. It's personified. She's there with you. What a wonderful, wonderful idea. In verse 4, she reaches out to us. She's reaching out to us. And brethren, I'm telling you, I write this to myself as much as anything. I ignore her. We ignore her at our peril. It is to our own peril if we ignore her. I want to drop down to verse 22, because this is sort of the crux. It's introducing this notion is really verses 1 through 4 and sort of the premise of who wisdom is. And again, I'd strongly encourage reading the entire chapter. Verse 22 says, the Lord possessed me. Remember, we're still talking about the personification of wisdom. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of his way, before he did his works. Possessing is interesting. I mean, God's the originator. The commentaries in the dictionary actually says he created wisdom. I don't know. I look at that. I don't know how God can, would, in the sense of creating a thing, create wisdom. Because I think a precondition for wisdom is truth. Because how do you make any wise decisions if there isn't a baseline of truth that is unchangeable and is true? And I think the precondition for truth is law. Because how can you have truth if the actual foundation of what you're basing truth on shifts and changes? So I think that, again, to say God created, which commentaries do, I actually like the possessed word more, or the originator of it. But this also tells us, again, just that one verse tells us something extraordinarily important, because it tells us that moral law, moral and ethical law, predates creation. It predates all physical laws. Verse 23, again, back to wisdoms. I have been established from everlasting, from the beginning, before there was ever an earth. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills, I was brought forth. While as yet he had not made the earth or the fields or the primal dust of the world. When he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep. When he established the clouds above. When he strengthened the fountains of the deep. When he assigned to the sea its limit so that the water should not transgress his command. When he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him as a master craftsman. I think the imagery there is just astounding. Here he's talking about wisdom is looking at saying, I was there with the Lord while all of these decisions were being made. Before any of that was done, I was there as his master craftsman, and I was daily his delight. The Lord delighted in this. It's a marvel. Rejoicing always before him. Rejoicing in his inhabited world. And my delight was with the sons of men. Again, I find that notion just extraordinarily informative and insightful and quite frankly astonishing. Because, brethren, what it tells us is wisdom is essential in the act of creation. She is woven into the very fabric of existence. She predates it. And that, think about the implications of that, which we don't have time to explore today. But another way of wording it would be wisdom was a precondition for existence. And therefore, all that exists is infused with and is a manifestation of God's wisdom. This includes, brethren, as I mentioned, the moral, ethical, and spiritual foundational laws and the principles by which they're guided by. Another way of saying it again, God isn't making this up as he goes along. He didn't look at the fall of man and go, oh man, now we need to come up with some rules. We need to come up with some ethical statement and some way for them to live. He didn't watch the disobedience of Israel and kind of look at his son, man, or vice versa. I guess we need to come up and codify some laws so that they can live by. It was all done before the first primal dust existed. And the Bible tells us in Proverbs 8, that is wisdom. And that's why we can make the claim that all that was done is a manifestation of God's wisdom. And again, that it changes our worldview on how so much of what's going on and so many things that we accept. The whole plan, brethren, the whole plan, literally the whole thing, is a manifestation, again, of God's wisdom. And if we believe that, we can learn a great deal by asking some interesting questions. And seeking thereby to understand why God did the things he did. The list is probably endless. I just jotted down a few. Why did he create the angelic realm? He did it. It's a manifestation of his wisdom. There's probably endless messages that could be given on that. But it's something that's interesting to think through. Why did he give them the freedom to choose? We know they, in time, one chose the wrong way, led a third of them astray with him. Why did he let that happen? I think the good thing is you go through these, or as I thought through these anyway, the church has really good answers for all of these. And it all works together and it all coalesces into a masterful plan. Why did he create his children in the realm of the devil? Again, you think about it. It's like, God knew that. The devil was here when he created Adam and Eve. He could have went to the farthest reaches of the universe and created them there. But he chose to put them here. He chose to put them in hell, which in one sense he did. It's a realm of the devil. And God lets them exist. Why is this world, again, I'll use my term, so pardon me if this probably not the best way to word it, but why is this world both hellish and heavenly? Why, in some cases, even the same event is just extraordinarily painful, but extraordinarily delightful. Why did he let Adam and Eve listen to Satan? I only have a few more. I'll go through them all. Why did he choose the weakest nation on earth to make his own? There's wisdom and understanding. You can back into that and begin to get a lot of understanding about God by understanding why he chose to do that. Why does he work with a select few today? Specific to the creation, why did Christ have to become a man? Why did he have to sacrifice himself? Why did he have to go through a horrible death? Couldn't somebody just walk up behind him like a lamb and slit his throat, didn't know it was coming, out he goes? Still died for us. But no, God says, wisdom says you're going to have to die a horrible death. Why does there have to be a terrible time of calamity before Christ returns? Our children, or one of these generations is going to go through that. And it's helpful to know part of that is wisdom from God. Even if, I say that even if sometimes we don't understand, I wish there was another way. But I also understand he's doing it, therefore it is wise to do it that way. And I suspect in time we'll understand why that is the case. I want to take a brief look at one of the things God planned out before the primordial dust was created. Because, brethren, we are living evidence of God's wisdom. We are actually that living evidence. And God understands. And we can learn a great deal about God and how we should conduct ourselves through this. Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, we'll start in verse 18. 1 Corinthians 1:18 says, "For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those who are being saved, it is the power of God." See, foolishness, biblically, is the opposite of wisdom. And true, the cross, and it's interesting, it doesn't say the cross. I tend to read it that way in my head. It actually says the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. And they are perishing because there's one path to life. There's one way. And brethren, you and I are blessed to be called now to it. And again, we also know in the plan of salvation, all will be called. But it is the message, and there is so much that is conveyed in the whole crucifixion story. Fundamentally embedded in that story, in the message, if you will, of the cross, is God becoming flesh. That's wisdom. The God becoming flesh has embedded in it humility. That's wisdom. Has embedded in it service, sacrifice, leadership, suffering, and you can go on and on. All of those are wisdom and models for us to conduct our life by. The whole structure of redemption is embedded in the message of the cross. The establishment of his community is embedded. That's one of the things he came to do, was I will build my church. That's one of the things he came, and the church itself is a manifestation of God's wisdom. Embedded in that, then again, inside the community is calling. We know all nations. There's an organizational structure to the church. Servanthood, discipleship, public proclamation of the gospel. Inside of the message of the cross has embedded in it the concept of a resurrection. Understanding we will all die, including God in the flesh, will die and be resurrected. Everyone goes through the gates of death. And there is wisdom in that too. And of course, perhaps the preeminent is salvation. That the price for our sin had to be paid, and it was paid by the perfect. All of that, again, you know, these are topics we hear messages on for however long you've been in the church. But it all stems from the wisdom of God. Verse 19, for it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? It's interesting. Paul says it's already been done. He's been destroyed and has been made foolish. Again, I find that in itself an interesting truth. Verse 21, for since in the wisdom of God, the world through wisdom did not know God, it pleased God through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. See, worldly wisdom would never lead you to understand this. It takes faith, but this is a remarkable understanding, again, that the wisdom of God, through the worldly wisdom, they cannot know God. They cannot know him. Paul says this is a manifestation of God's wisdom. And again, it goes on and on, but this begins to talk to those who are called out, those who are given a chance now, those of you who have that calling now. That's why I started the section with, you are a manifestation, you are a personification of God's wisdom. That's us. And God calls us and asks us to act accordingly and to make decisions so that we in turn can be a light to the world. And we'll see here, no, it does not make you better. No, it does not make you somehow pride and anger. That's literally the opposite of what God's saying you should have as you understand this wisdom. For the Jews, verse 22, for the Jews request a sign and the Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified. To the Jews a stumbling block and to the Greeks foolishness. But to those who are called. Think about this. Christ crucified to the world is either a stumbling block or it's foolish. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. Is Christ the power of God to you? Is Christ crucified the wisdom of God? Does it change and move and shake everything in your life? Yes, it must. And it does for every disciple of Christ. It is power and it is wisdom. Verse 25, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh and not many mighty, many noble are called. And brethren, as I mentioned, it takes humility, because when you see the topic of wisdom in the Bible discussed, there is almost always faith and humility close by. Verse 27, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise. Did you know you're the foolish thing of the world? God's done that to put to shame the wise of this world. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things that are mighty. And the base things of the world and the things which are despised, God has chosen. And the things which are not to bring the things that are, bring to nothing the things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. Now, brethren, that is some wisdom for us to live and conduct our life by. You didn't do anything to earn this. You can claim no glory. All glory goes to your Lord and your Savior. Pride, arrogance, self-seeking has no place in the presence of God. But of him, verse 30, but of him you are in Christ, who became for us wisdom from God. Think about that. God incarnate coming into the flesh is wisdom from God. Understanding what he is doing and understanding his plan informs and modifies and again colors every aspect of your life, every decision you make. Every way you conduct yourself, every disagreement you have with your spouse, every anxiety and frustration you have with your children, every one you have with your parents, and every other relationship, and every other interaction, and every decision you make in your life. Wisdom from God. How do you conduct it? Again, does that decision make your life more hellish or more heavenly? In the terms, in the way I mean it. Again, just rereading verse 3. He became wisdom from God and righteousness and sanctification and redemption. That as it is written, he who glories, let him glory in the Lord. I'll just read this to you because I think it's important, because further, like, it's a very, in one sense, individual section of verse we just read. But God's wisdom is further described and further manifested in bringing all of us together in the form of a church. And I'll read this for note takers if you want, Ephesians chapter 3, 8 through 11. He says, to me, who am less than the least of all the saints, this grace was given that I should preach among the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ, and to make all see what is the fellowship of the mystery, which from the beginning of the ages has been hidden. Again, it's essentially saying since the primordial dust till now, this has been a mystery. It has been hidden from all. And we'll see how many it has been hidden from in the next verse. Who created all things through Christ Jesus to the intent that now the manifold wisdom of God might be made known by the church. Brother, do we understand what we do and how we interact and how we support and how we build up and how we treat and how we view other people in this body to the world? Manifest the wisdom of God to the world. The intent now that the manifold wisdom of God might be known by the church. To the principalities and the powers in the heavenly places, even to the heavenly places, they did not know what God was intending to do with his body. They did not know every race, every creed, every tongue, every single person that God calls is welcome here. And they're, yeah, okay, we're not the smartest, we're not the greatest, we're not the prettiest, we're not the richest, but we are children of God. And as a body, we have an obligation to treat each other in such a way. I'm skipping over 3 time check notes. Brother, my case today is this, that there are 2 sources of wisdom. And every day, we make the decision which source we're going to follow. Every interaction, every argument you're in that moment, you're making a decision which one you're going to follow. Do you have bitterness, self-seeking, and envy? Or do you have patience, humility, and kindness? One of them's going to improve your life. One of them's going to make it worse. That's part of my case today. Another part is godly wisdom pre-existed the primordial dust. She is woven into the very fabric of existence, and she sat next to God as he created everything. And that would include, again, the whole plan of God, including his moral and ethical law. My other case, she cries out to you. Listen to her. She's crying out. The question you got to ask, will you listen to her? Listen when you make the smallest of decisions. Hear her when you navigate the paths of life. Seek her at every crossroad. Look to wisdom for all the far-reaching decisions you must make. Because, brethren, you can ignore her, but you cannot escape her. And if you ignore her, the Bible says you're a fool, because she's speaking. Final case I want to make is set your mind and your heart to intentionally seek her out. I don't think wisdom You can gain some wisdom by just blindly going through this life. A much better way is to set your intention and your mind and your heart to seek out wisdom. Pursue it. Make it an intentional act in your life. Too many people, I think, and I've done this, especially when I was younger, man, I'm just blindly going through life. In conclusion, I want to go back and read the final five verses of Proverbs 8, which we did not read. Again, if you would turn back, because I think this is worth noting. I'm going to read the previous sentence, and as it so turns out, it's about four verses. So I'll just read it, but I think it's a good running head start to the final set of verses in that book of Proverbs chapter 8. I'm going to start in verse 27, which is where the previous sentence starts. And again, we already read this, so I'll go over it quickly. It says, "When he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he drew out the circle of the face of the deep, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, when he assigned the sea to its limit so that the water should not transgress his commands, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him as a master craftsman. I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing in the inhabited world. All my delight was with the sons of men." Based upon that understanding, now what? Verse 32, "Now therefore, knowing wisdom was with him, now therefore, listen to me, my children, for blessed are you if you keep my ways. Hear instruction and be wise, and do not disdain it. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the post of my doors. For whoever finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who sins against me wrongs his own soul, and all those who hate me love death. Brethren, the choice is yours." The choice is yours. Are you going to listen to wisdom that existed before the primordial dust? Or are we going to sin against her and wrong our own souls?